Ready to go?
Start the music. Yep.
I'm all hopped up on teeth. I've had 3 cups already, so I know I'm talking fast. Deep breath.
Hello, and welcome to Drupal Easy Podcast number 81, I believe it is. I'm your host for today, Ryan Price, and we have our final interviews from DrupalCon Denver today, as well as 2 of our hosts on the call today with us. First of all is Mr. Michael Anello.
Hello, Mr. Price.
And also we have Andrew M. Riley, who is joining us from the depths of a school somewhere in Central Florida.
Yeah. Well, it's my duty to drop off my son today, so, you know, just one of those things. I'm domestic.
So today we have 3 interviews for you. One of them is someone we've had on the show before, Ryan Zarama from Drupal Commerce.
Very good dental hygiene there.
Yes, indeed. We also have from Black Mesh Hosting, Dan Reif, who's every time I go to DrupalCon, I always say at their booth, like, oh, we should totally get them on. So finally, since I was doing my run around DrupalCon with my microphone, just said, let's go in the corner and talk for a minute. And then last but not least, from Palantir, we have Colleen Carroll and Robin Berry talking about the Workbench module and some of the other cool work they're doing. So that's your teaser. Stick around for that. And we have a couple of news stories today. So first of all, Mike,
yes,
you recently did training in Fort Lauderdale. It ended up getting switched to Miami, right?
Yeah, we actually ended up doing a week of Drupal training at Florida International University. It was actually great. We had a nice turnout. We did a full week starting with zero to Drupal, all the way up through module and theme development. It was kind of a hybrid public-private training. We had some public students as well as a number of people from Florida International University, which is the reason why we were able to switch it, because they said, we want to send a bunch of people to your training, and we have a room, so give us a good deal, and you can use our facilities. And we said, sounds like a deal.
That's always good.
Yeah. And actually, I don't know, hopefully we'll get this podcast out in the next day or two. I'll actually be teaching a pre-camp training at Drupal Camp Nashville just 2 days from now on Friday, April 27th. And then
so basically, if someone's already planning on going, they should leave a day early?
They should definitely check out. It's an introductory course. It's our normal zero to Drupal course. And then I'll be at the camp all day on Saturday. I've got a couple sessions. I'm going to do Blue Collar Drush and Tinkertoy Git on Saturday.
I've seen your Tinkertoy Git presentation. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's getting better. I just actually gave it again last night. We had a meetup here in Brevard County on the Space Coast. So that's kind of my presentation du jour that I've been working on and polishing and making sure I don't say anything ridiculous. So far, so good. But we have some other training events that are coming up. I can't quite announce yet, but we're kind of planning out this summer, and we're going to be at a couple of different locations.
It's safe to say East Coast, right,
Mike? It's safe to say, yeah, I was about to say somewhere in the eastern U.S. We're really excited about. Cool. Hopefully by the next podcast I'll be able to announce those and start drumming up some excitement for them.
Okay, so do you guys want to do one news story and then we'll get to an interview and maybe we'll shift back and forth here?
Yeah, how long has it been since it's only been the 3 of us without, a guest? It's been a while.
Just the 3 of us?
That's a really good question. We've had a lot of guests lately. And, well, I guess technically we have guests now, although they're time shifted.
Yeah, but they can't interrupt us. Those are the best kind of guests.
We actually got some comments that, the guests talk and then they don't say anything for the rest of the podcast unless we actually ask them a question.
So we need to figure out how to... Because we duct tape their mouths, tie them up, and leave them in a closet somewhere.
I guess. We need to, liquor up our guests or something so that they don't feel ashamed of busting in on the conversation.
We need to...
But send them, a hip flask in the mail?
Yeah,
Or we can just, stop talking and have an uncomfortable silence until they speak up.
We'll have to try that. See how it goes.
Yeah. So we're always looking for ideas. Actually, before we started recording this podcast, we were brainstorming ideas for the next few podcasts for some guests. And we have some ideas that we're going to reach out to. But if anybody, you know, has some recommendations or suggestions or a wish list for guests, by all means, let us know at drupaleasy.com/contact. And, you know, we're usually pretty receptive to that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. So.
Yeah.
I suggest Mike Rowe, even though he has nothing to do with Drupal.
Guy's got the best voice, doesn't he?
Yes, Drupal's he does. It's dreamy.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah. Are there any dirty Drupal jobs, though?
Migration.
Oh, that is a dirty job. You just got done with a big migration, didn't you? I heard about you.
Yeah. That. But I have been doing the migrate module is actually a joy to use.
Yeah.
Yes.
The migration itself... not very fun. Using the migrate module, incredibly fun.
Yeah, the thing with all migrations is they're all kind of dirty, but that's really dependent on the data coming in. I don't think I've ever done a migration where I've looked at the data coming in and said, wow, this data is really well formatted. It's really organized.
Yeah. Well, everybody has their own way of organizing stuff, and I think that's the thing is like, even when you, if you move in with your girlfriend, you know, or whoever it happens to be, you have two completely different ways of thinking about, you know, where to put things and what to call them. And so you're like, where does this box go? Where does this box go? Where does this box go? You just have to keep asking over and over again.
Right. So where, what was your migration? Where were you going from?
I was going from a back-end system that we use at Proctor's Theater, which is... the database itself is a Postgres database.
Okay.
And I realized later that if I had started my new Drupal project on Postgres, that it would have been a little bit easier, but not that much easier, because apparently once you're in MySQL, it's really, really hard, if not damn near impossible, to translate to Postgres.
So what
because they just use different languages.
So what? How did you approach this? Did you first move everything from Postgres into MySQL and then do the migration basically? From-
I did it live, basically. So Drupal 7 makes it really easy to connect to more than one database and more than one kind of database.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was just a certain point in my migrate script where I had to say... to set the database active. I don't remember the name of the function right now, but it's like something like Drupal Connect DB or Drupal Active DB or something like that. You just tell your other database, then you do a couple of the commands that go and query the other database, and then you set it back to your default. And as long as you put those calls in the right place, it doesn't explode. And then last but not least, there was a thing in Migrate that said the tables from this migration... You're not allowed to try and join them to my tables. And so Migrate actually has a system for that because they must have done something. One of the examples they give you, by the way, if you have a module that is an API style module and it does not have an examples module, shame on you. Shame.
This moment of shame brought to you by Drupal Easy.
In this case, they have an example. It's a migrate example oracle. And that was how I learned that to set that map joinable equals false. So they must have dealt with this before or had someone who dealt with this before, Mike and Moshe, and they just wrote it in there. It was great.
Super. All right, well, we can go on and on about the migrate module, but we should probably move on to actually what we planned about talking about.
Okay, let's go and get into an interview. Would you guys like to start with Dan from Black Mesh? He basically sits all day and tunes servers and gets you set up. One thing to note about Black Mesh is they do dedicated servers. They don't do virtual servers. They don't do clouds. They do dedicated servers. It's a very specific, very... I'm not going to say very high-end because I actually don't know what their exact prices are, but... these guys really know their crap. Let's just say that. and so here we are with Dan from Black Mesh, Washington, D.C.
And now I am joined by Dan Reif from Black Mesh, which is a hosting company. And you guys, you're always at DrupalCon. And you do lots of Drupal stuff, right, Dan?
Yeah, we were talking about it earlier, trying to figure out how many had been. Six or seven DrupalCons in a row now. I believe we've attended, been sponsors at everyone that we've attended, and you know, we're just seeing the community grow and grow, and it's a real pleasure to see.
Cool. And you know, you guys are in what, Washington D.C.?
We're based out of Northern Virginia with data centers in Northern Virginia, Las Vegas, and on the West Coast.
Cool. And so, in my mind, like, and based on the conversations I've had at your booth in the last couple of years, I see you guys as like kind of like a high performance. It's dedicated servers. Like, you guys are doing like fully managed stuff, right? Am I getting this all right?
Yeah, everything that we do is dedicated hardware. Even with our cloud offerings, that hardware is dedicated to you. So you're never going to be in a situation where you've been allocated, you know, 8 gigs of RAM, but 2 gigs of that has actually been swapped to disk on the physical server.
Right, right. And so, you know, we're in a land right now where, like, for a long time we had like search engine optimization snake oil, and I feel like now we're getting to a place where, because the sort of formulas for doing like high performance websites are starting to be pretty widely published, that you could get somebody who would call themselves a performance expert, and just because they had read like some article on Slashdot.
Right, and you know, honestly, we encourage it, because the people who show up with that level of expertise and describe themselves as performance experts are going to do one of two things. They're either going to get lucky and get it right, in which case there are more high-performance Drupal sites in the world, or they're not, in which case someone's going to come to us. The big thing to look out for in the course of engaging someone to work with you on performance is to ask, what other sites have you worked on? Get in touch with those people. Make sure that you get references. Without references, someone who claims to be a performance expert could very well have simply learned it all off the web in the last 2 weeks.
Right. And is there any like particular I don't know, like, is there anything that you would see as a red flag? Like, let's say that you were looking to hire someone. What would be the things that would let you know that this guy was kind of talking out of his ass?
Sure. Can we say ass on the internet?
You can say whatever you want.
That's great. So the number one red flag to look for is unwillingness to provide references. The number two is ask them about their process and their methodology of the engagement. If interviews with you is not a huge component of that, even more important than gathering metrics, because gathering metrics just shows you where the site stands today. Interviews are how you figure out, okay, what are the portions of the site that can't be optimized away? If you're running YouTube, you can't optimize away the fact that people are going to want to post new content. You can optimize the actual display of that video by pushing it out closer to the edge. That's the kind of thing that you discover through an interview with the site owner, and then take that information and turn that into a plan of, okay, you know, here's where we think there's some code optimization that could take place. Here's where we know that the infrastructure really needs to change to accommodate your needs.
Cool. And so, like, there's definitely a lot of moving parts with a Drupal site now. Like, you got all different kinds of modules, you got the database layer, and then, you know, and this caching has really, like, there's this whole plethora of options for caching now and CDN. So, like, what are some things that people should absolutely be looking at? And I realize it can change on a case-by-case basis, but, like, there may be, like, two or three things that everyone should probably at least evaluate when they're looking at doing a performance audit, maybe, on their site.
Of course. So the first thing is to get off of shared hosting of any kind. If you're on a $5 a month hosting account, and it's your business, it's how you make your livelihood, then ask yourself what the true cost is of that hosting going down. You don't have to come to a solution of the caliber of Black Mesh, but you should come to something where you have full control over that server, because the second step is going to be installing APC. There are others, there's eAccelerator, a few others. APC is really kind of the de facto standard at this point. There are a couple up-and-coming technologies like hip-hop that aren't really ready for prime time right now. That may change in a year. Always be looking at performance from an overall standpoint. So don't get caught up in optimizing a single query. Narayan Newton of Tag One Consulting had a great presentation on this at this particular DrupalCon, where he's saying, don't get zoomed in. Zoom out, look at the big picture, and ask yourself, why would this be happening systemically rather than fixing the individual query or, you know, individual page that it is that you've identified as the performance issue?
Well, it's very similar to like a doctor. Like, you tell the doctor, like, oh, my back hurts. If all he does is give you an ibuprofen and the problem continues, then he's not doing his job very well, right?
Right, right. And your back might well hurt because, you know, there's a nail that's stuck in your spine above your back that's, you know, interrupting that nerve or something like this. Yeah. You know, you have to look at the whole problem. You know, why can't the man see? You know, because the room is dark, not because he's blind.
Cool. And so, I mean, you come to a lot of DrupalCons, right? So is there something that's been really great about Denver in particular?
Well, unfortunately, it's been the weather, and I say unfortunately because we'd really been looking forward to getting some late season skiing in. As a company, several of us are pretty ardent skiers and snowboarders. We looked it up just yesterday, and it's going to be, I think, 70 odd degrees at Vail today. So that's not exactly the best skiing weather, but you know what? It's been great to be outside, just, you know, walking along the streets, beautiful city. Beautiful people, and we really appreciate them hosting the conference and inviting us to it.
Cool. And so, it's not distracting at all. Definitely give you guys a chance to plug a little bit about Black Mesh. Like, you know, you said you guys do a lot of dedicated servers. How do they find out more information? Are you doing sort of like DrupalCon, like, I don't know, specials or something like that?
Sure. So, Black Mesh, more information, www.blackmesh.com. Find us on Twitter, @BlackMesh. We're on Facebook, I think, @/BlackMesh. The social media aspect is actually being handled by our brand new director of marketing, so shout out to Kenna. As far as what we do, we take care of the entire Drupal stack up to your custom code and content, and we do it without forcing you into a box. So that kind of sets us apart from a lot of other hosters that go to the level that we do, in that we'll manage things like your Drupal modules for you, you know, per your request, not without consent, of course. But we won't force you to use our particular workflow in order to accomplish that. We'll come into whatever situation you find works best for you and your business and work with you to accomplish whatever it is that you're looking to accomplish.
Very cool. Well, Dan Reif, thanks very much. And I'm glad that 3 years later, I finally got to do a Black Mesh interview for my podcast.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, so have you guys ever been in that situation where, you know, the server guy kind of tells you he knows what he's talking about, and then you realize a couple minutes into it that, no, he really doesn't?
Oh. Yes.
Yes, without a doubt. And some of the most painful experiences dealing with that type of thing. Ugh.
And the company...
I should say server guy or girl.
The company that I got burned by rhymes with Mario. And we'll just leave it at that.
Interesting.
It was one of those things where we could never get a true tech support person on the phone. It always went to a call center where the person, I mean, I could hear them like flipping through a binder, trying to go through the troubleshooting steps. And every time I would have to call, we would always have to start at the beginning. And I was never allowed direct access to a person who actually had hands-on hardware.
Wait, so hold on. Thank you, Mr. Anillo. Have you tried CHMOD the file?
Yeah. It took me about a month and a half before I convinced the client to switch hosts. Because the client had been using this host for, not only their website, but for other things as well. So they were very reluctant to leave them. But it just got to the point where we couldn't progress. So.
And that's one thing I found with Drupal is with Drupal, you generally need a better web host. It can't be one of those, you know, $1.99 a month type, that's $1.99 a month type host. You actually need someone that at least knows half their stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, just for little things so that you can, you know, make sure that you can enable clean URLs or, you know, if you need a little bit more memory. I mean, just these.
Well, and even just like, but if you think about, you know, if you have a business where the bulk of your business, the only way you interact with your customers is through your website, and you're going with one of those $9.99 a month hosts,
yeah,
you're probably doing it wrong.
You get what you pay for.
That's right. So I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you have any idea how many modules in Contrib provide new kinds of fields? So in Core, we have the number field, and we have the text field, and we have the text area field, and or no, it's called the long text. Dang it. I screwed that up already. But anyway, one example would be like date or address or something like that. How many do you think we have?
For Drupal 7, we're talking, right?
For Drupal 7, yeah.
I'm going to guess 1,000.
No.
Lower.
Come on.
It's actually, no, the reason I said that number high, it's super easy to actually create a field.
But how many real use cases are there? But it's lower than 1,000.
I'm going to go with 75.
Higher than 75.
200.
A little lower than 200.
$1.
It's 150. So actually, Lynn Clark, this was couple weeks ago now, she wrote this article, but we have also not been doing this podcast for the last couple of weeks. It's called Drupal 7 Field Modules by Popularity, and so she says there are 150 Contrib projects for Drupal 7 that declare new field types. And basically she did this by doing an API search and looking for all the modules that define hook field info. And I will have you guess, what are some of the top 10, you think, modules that provide a new field? And some of them may surprise you.
I think number one is going to be link.
Close. That's number two.
That's number two. Oh, what's above link?
How about the entity reference ones?
That's number four, references.
How about email?
Email number five.
Address?
Address field is number six.
We're missing something obvious for number one.
Yeah. It's something obvious,
right? It's something you use so often, you probably don't even remember that it is a Contrib module.
Date.
Good job. You're
number one. So far we've got, you're missing number three right now.
How about a clue?
Well, picture in your mind this module.
Image field?
Well, that's part of Core now.
That's part of Core, yeah.
Oh, yeah, duh. Sure.
It's media.
Oh, okay.
Big one.
The media module, right.
But that actually, if you look at it, 8 has over 200,000 installs, Link has 130-something thousand installs, and then there's that's the long tail, right? That's the fat part of the long tail. Then media, 46,000. Yeah. So anyway, just rounding out the top really fast, meta tags quick, which I did not know that provided a field. Commerce provides a number of different fields. An entity reference, field collection, 5-star. I think that's 10.
Hey, so just out of curiosity, what do you guys use for reference fields? Do you guys use references or entity reference or something else?
Well, I changed to entity reference because the module page told me to.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, I love it. Entity reference is really nice. I like the way it makes a lot of sense to me. I was going to say there's also like the relation module, and then there's also the direct ports of node reference and user reference, which are in there as well. But what were you going to say?
Done. The node reference and user reference one.
Right.
But one thing I thought was interesting was that
They're no longer being developed?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're, maybe, you know, maintained to a certain degree, but not really like adding new features or anything. One thing I thought was interesting is like the new version of organic groups, instead of having its own field type, actually uses entity reference.
Oh, yeah, really?
Makes sense.
Wow. Yeah.
So we get to spend another month or so figuring out how to use the new version of organic groups, or should it take less time?
Yes, but it's better, right? Like, what's inside of a year or so, he's now basically completely rewritten organic groups again, because the first time it was a little too complicated.
I hope that
this time. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, it's just, I was just telling somebody the other day about like how we used to have something like the event module, and the event module, it defined the date fields and the calendar displays and a bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. And then somebody invented the date field and the calendar module, and now it's gotten even better where the iCal part of the calendar module has been extracted. Like, there's all these things that are very decoupled. They don't really rely on each other very much, but you can still use them to achieve the same thing. They're more flexible and more powerful. So that's what they're starting to do with organic groups is organic groups doesn't even define its own field type for belonging to a group anymore. It's just an entity reference. And then organic groups wrap some like logic around it. And it at least in the version I was using most recently, it was using rules for a lot of the notifications and logic and stuff. So you could actually like turn off some of the group notifications and stuff just through the rules UI.
Everything you
sounds
said,
like,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, go on, Mike.
I was just say it sounds like they are, you know, going the route that kind of, or moving towards a more commerce type of suite of modules where they are leveraging as much as they can from other projects.
Darn, that was almost exactly what I was going to say.
Great minds, my friend. Great minds.
Exactly. So overall, they're trying to reduce code debt.
Definitely, yeah. And it's, you know, it still may be a little harder to figure out at the beginning, but you could also still ship an example module that kind of configures it all in a default way for you. And then just, if that's all, if all you need was like the default, then you've got it already, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Hey, so do we have another interview?
We do. You guys have used the Workbench module before?
Oh, yes. Love-hate relationship.
So yeah.
We have two of the maintainers of Workbench on, Colleen Carroll and Robin Berry from Palantir up in Chicago. And we were able to sit down outside the expo hall and talk about what they've been working on recently.
Okay, so now we're here with, in alphabetical order, Colleen Carroll and Robin Berry, or the other way around.
Right.
Who's alphabetical? Is it lexical sorting,
name.
First name, last name? I don't know.
It's Colleen can go first.
Okay.
I don't mind.
And you guys are Palantir folks?
Yep.
Palantir-y?
Mm-hmm.
That's
yes.
a thing?
That's
okay.
correct.
You hang out with that little dog?
Yes. Kiki.
Yes.
She makes Mondays fun. I'll just
yeah.
get it out.
She looks like Falcor a little bit.
Yeah,
she does. A lot smaller, though.
And you guys specifically, guys, girls, you people?
We respond to guys.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I don't mind guys.
Okay.
Okay.
You work on Workbench.
That's correct.
And you had a session about it?
We did.
Okay, session. Good. What were the, like, what was the one thing that you needed to get to people about Workbench this time?
Our session this time was actually within the business strategy track. So what we really wanted to point out, I think, to the bigger community or to the businesses that come to DrupalCon is that you can find a way for your team to contribute back and have it be a good solution, good strategy, good marketing, good team morale for the company, that you should contribute back and has a bigger value than just giving away, you know, free code.
Well, and Palantir is a big fan of, like, trying to get their projects that have some new functionality to generalize it and contribute back, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So that's cool. Like, this is a theme that we've been hearing a lot lately. It's, like, trying to get the clients, particularly, like, the bigger ones who maybe have some more resources, I guess you could say, like, or maybe sometimes they just have a bigger problem and time to solve it is really kind of the way to describe it, to do those contributions. And then have you guys been making improvements to Workbench? Like, I know there's like a version two that's coming out.
Yeah,
Yeah, in a couple of weeks we'll be releasing a new version of Workbench Moderation, a 2X branch, and we're really excited because essentially we kind of culled out the old code and replaced it with support from various contributed modules that already exist that do the job that we were already doing. So, for instance, we're integrating with State Machine, and it's handling the changes from one state to another, basically from draft to needs review and then to published. And then we are also integrating with CTools, so we could create something called Workbench Workflows that allows you to say, these are my states, this is how you can transition from one to the other, and then export that, and it's, you know, your configuration is in code now. So we're really excited about the possibilities here. And one more feature that comes out with this is the ability to have a state flow history entity, which allows us to apply fields to that entity. So you can start doing things like, well, you can publish this as long as the editorial approval checkbox is checked. Otherwise, you can't actually get to the published state. So, and just, you know, any field you want, you could put in there and start applying rules to it and say, okay, this can be published, or no, it can't, or this needs review now, that sort of thing.
And so it kind of like makes it a little more asynchronous. So,
right.
Like, your editor doesn't have to push the button. He can say, yeah, whatever, you push it whenever you want.
That's right. And the scenarios that we've been seeing is that you might need a legal review as well as an editorial review or accessibility reviews. They don't have to happen in a particular order, but they need to happen before publishing,
yeah.
Right? Before it goes live, before people can see it.
Cool. And the workflow, it used to be people think about it in a very linear way.
Right.
So this is definitely like one of those, it's modern, it's hip, it's distributed, it's the web. Right?
I think it is, and it's more realistic. So people think they can have this straight line workflow, but when it comes to reality,
that is not how we work.
Exactly.
Everything is non-linear. It's a real business requirement for a lot of institutions. Workflow is one of the hardest things to define from a business level. You know, people can't even do it without a system. So why lock them into, sorry, you can't go to the next step because you didn't, you know, complete everything here. It's like, let people get to it in their time, and then that last checkpoint has to meet all the criteria, and then you're ready to go.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess rewinding a little bit, like, Workbench comes out of some projects that you guys had, your with your clients, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk, who's Colleen? I'm looking at Colleen. Ready, shoot.
So Workbench started about 2 years ago. I was saying yesterday in our session that it came out of sort of this frustration of going into client kickoffs, discoveries, and hearing them ask questions, you know, assumptions about, oh, I'm going to get this content management system. I don't really know anything about Drupal, but I get to do. And there's always these, like, three big things that they want that just don't happen in Drupal. And it's always, you know, the idea that you don't have this concept of draft content, that if you need to prep something to go live next week, you have to, where do you write that? You can't write that in the content because the content's already live. So that was one of the big things that we added, was this draft state. And then, like, you just can't find your content. You're a content editor. You don't care about the whole system. You care about the content that you are in charge of. And when you log in, you should have some understanding of what did I recently edit, or what relates to me as a user within this system. And then, you know, the other big thing was getting Drupal out of the way. It shouldn't be about Drupal. It shouldn't even have to know that it is Drupal. It should be, this is my website, and here's the content, and I want to edit it. So that's, Workbench started with that, because we just wanted to bring some consistency to the user experience, and we didn't feel like our clients had to pay for us to customize it each time.
Right.
So it should be something that came with Drupal.
And it's more of like a holistic approach to content editing, like, as an experience, than just this module adds a button to every node, which it does do, but it does so much more, right? And it has your is it, what's the actual, like, home screen called?
My Workbench dashboard.
Okay.
So it's, you know, we added a little button to the top left-hand corner of the black screen, so that we're trying to train, when we train our users, we just say, go to My Workbench. They find it right away. Then they get to the screen and they see a bunch of information that makes sense to them. It's intuitive. So, you know, know, minimizes our training already. And what we found to be the reason why we know it's really working is that no one notices it's there. They just think, like,
yeah, they're
wait.
Like, of course this is what Drupal does,
yeah.
right? Like, they just don't even understand. They're
right.
Like, or they say, does this come with Drupal core? I'm like,
oh. No, it took a lot of work to get it here. The other thing we want to do is really get, there's a lot of, with Drupal, there's 100 ways to do the same thing. So that was another thing that Workbench was supposed to solve for. And some of what's on our on Robin and I's planning, it's not on the roadmap yet, but we're kind of trying to get there. Just let's try to find a way to hide some of those other content lists and those other things that they don't need to see. Give it maybe to the admin user who really just needs to see Drupal because they like it. But for everybody else, let's keep them in the intuitive, you know, dashboard. And hopefully they'll be happier.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I know when I build sites, I build a lot of admin interfaces or views or
right.
panel pages
table,
or something.
Like table admin views that
oh,
they
yeah.
can sort the content. And
totally.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of time on every project.
Right. Definitely. And I think when I go into sites where they didn't think about that at all, mm-hmm. you know, you take over a project or something and just go, like, don't have they ever actually, like, used a Drupal site before? Because the minute that you actually, like, that it's your job to publish things on a Drupal site, you go, like, this interface is kind of missing some stuff.
Right. What am I doing now?
Yeah.
Where am I at? What happened to my content?
Right.
I just had.
Right. It was just here.
I know.
So we're at DrupalCon.
Mm-hmm.
And DrupalCon's a great, like, collaboration space. It's got, you know, it's got BOFs, it's got core conversations, it's got hallways, it's got the expo hall, the day stage, like all these really cool, like, there's a different experience for depending on what your goal is, right? So what do you guys look to get out of DrupalCon? I mean, obviously you have some time at your company booth, like
mm-hmm.
selling things, and your clients come up and they want to know what's, can I do this with Drupal? Okay, yeah, you can do it. It's fine. But what's your, like, do you have, like, personal goals when you come here?
Well, I think this particular DrupalCon, I was excited that Steve Persh, who's an engineer at Palantir, and myself, that we got to do a core conversation called I Just Want to Edit a Node, and that had to do really with the larger workflow community and how we have to do a little bit of juggling of revisions right now to get things to work the way we want them to. It doesn't matter if it's Workbench moderation, state machine, entity revision scheduler, what is it, Maestro, you know, there are a whole bunch of different ways. Revisioning, did I say that one? You know, we've each kind of come up with our own hoops that we jump through to try and get this, you know, draft and needs review and publish thing working. And so what we were able to present the other day was, can we put some changes into core that would remove some of these hoops from our from our contributed modules and make things easier and let us get to some more fancier things. And, you know, the people that were in that conversation were very open and receptive. And I like the idea that maybe, you know, Colleen and I come here and present on the business track about Workbench and a business process. And yet I can go have this core conversation where we're talking about what changes happen in core that can make our lives better as developers. So I think having all of that in one place is pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's like it's somebody got their chocolate in our peanut butter.
Right.
You know?
Right. Chocolate.
It's I could use some blood sugar right now, honestly.
Right.
Like, it's the end of the day. It's
about
3 o'clock. Like, the whole conference is over in half an hour.
Right. Yeah.
It'll be sad, but also, like, I'll be happy to get some sleep at the same
Seriously.
Time.
Seriously. Absolutely. I think that's what I love about DrupalCon is that, you know, we're away from work for a week, so it seems like it's going to be like a, you know, decompression time. We're going to have some space away, and we do. We end up starting to think about things like Workbench. We're going to be able to really iterate on it, you know, over beers or whatever, not actually writing code, but just planning. And you have that time and that luxury, and you have access to not only your direct team but the rest of the community or other people.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole week, and it makes you just as exhausted, but as you know, you get excited again, you get that momentum running again.
It's like recharging your batteries.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can also share. I love sharing, you know, Palantir's process. process with people. I think every session that I do, I want to talk about. We want to be transparent about what we do, because someone will always give us feedback about, oh, really, you do that? We do it this way instead. Or they'll say, that's great. I didn't know that, and that really helped me better. You know, it's more than just about code. It's about just sort of that sharing, that experience.
Well, and you guys are also, like, really big fans of, like, publishing some of that stuff, and, like, now you have, like, your own magazine.
Our zine.
Right. It's like 15 pages long, maybe?
I think it is about 15 pages. We're bringing back the 90s.
No, I love zines. I'm just going to go there. It's like good bathroom reading, you know? Like.
No, it is, because it's meant to be informal and quirky and show you the inside, you know, the insider view of Palantir. And I think what's really also exciting about it is that our designers design it. They both have print backgrounds, but are really, you know, I mean, they've taken a whole nother level from the website. But just this last 2 months, they've been working on those two print pieces, and they're amazing. So I think it's cool that we're, you know, we don't have to outsource that stuff. We can not only make it, but then share it and have a plan for that.
Well, I'm sure for them, like, it's really nice to design something where you, like, know what the end product is going to look like.
I think that's
one reason why I'm not a designer, is because I couldn't stand, like, making something and then looking at it in another browser and, like,
right.
Yes.
There's some challenges like that.
Well, very nice, Colleen and Robin. Almost forgot.
It's our little book.
Robin Robino on IRC.
Oh yeah, very nice.
And Carol Tron.
Carol Tron.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. So, do you guys have, like, personal spaces where you post stuff? Obviously, you should check out Palantir and the awesome, lots of blogs go up there, right?
Yes. Yep.
But do you guys have, like, anything else? Like, this is where you have to go check out my, you know, dinosaur pictures or something? Like, what do you have?
I think Robin and I are both quite embarrassed with our personal websites. Made a plan to figure out.
Well, there's some migration work that needs to be done, and maybe check back with us.
I almost think that should be, like, part of the code sprint day, is, like,
work on your own website. I think my site might be in D6. At least it's not in D5 anymore.
Mine is also in D6 still.
It's so bad.
Maybe we should jump and wait till D8, you know,
maybe
to go over.
Yeah, we'll just be the beta testers for it.
That's right.
Well, very cool, and very nice to have a conversation with you.
Yeah,
and check out the Workbench.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was a good interview. It's funny, Ryan, because literally I think the night after you did this interview, I ran into Colleen in the lobby of the Hyatt, and basically sat down and spent about a half hour with them talking about Workbench and covering a lot of the same things that you covered in the interview.
Cool.
So I know that, Andrew, you got to run, but you want to do your pick of the week really quick?
Yes, I'll give you my abbreviated version of it. So lately I've been working a lot in Drupal Commerce, and I ran across the Commerce Price Savings Formatter module, and it's a really cool module, nice and simple. You know how I like the simple ones. It will essentially show what the list price is, what the price is that you're paying, and what your savings is. It's got some options to show you, like, the dollar or the percentage, but it makes it nice and clear so you can see what the savings is on a when you actually go into a product display as a consumer.
Oh, and it's just a display formatter for the price field. So you go into Manage Display and select this formatter, and it just plops it right there on the page for you.
Exactly. Super simple, and you don't have to go diving around in the bowels of commerce.
Oh, that's a nice pick.
Okay, well, I will bid you guys farewell, and to our listeners.
We will see you on the next podcast, my friend. Farewell.
Most definitely.
All right.
So, Ryan, what's your pick of the week?
Oh, wow. We're doing pick of the week. Let's do it.
You know, we're in the mode. Might as well. Let's mix this podcast up. Let's get crazy with K.
Have you seen this? I would venture so far as to call this a Drupal startup based on a module.
I have seen it, and I'm trying to think, have there been any others, Drupal startups based on literally a single, we'll call it a single project. I'm starting to say the word project instead of module these days. because so many modules are actually multiple modules.
Yes.
I think this is the first of its kind.
It's really interesting. Everybody knows Nate Haug, Quick Sketch, and his excellent maintainership of the WebForm module. And actually, I was listening to this interview on the Modules Unraveled podcast, I think it was, and he was saying that he didn't originally write WebForm. And like some of his most popular modules, like Flag, you know, it was originally Vue's Bookmark. I think Earl Miles originally wrote Vue's Bookmark, and then Nate took it over and turned it into Flag and did some other stuff. But WebForm, you know, it's a powerhouse. It's kind of in that land, though, like we're just talking about, of modules that kind of do a couple of things all in the same module. Like, it defines its own field types, and it defines how to do email notifications and some things like that. So I know that some alternatives are starting to emerge to WebForm, but it's just so useful. And basically, Nate took the WebForm module and kind of did like a nice little configuration of it, and then what's his module with the drag and drop for WebForm? Form Builder?
I'll look that up while you're talking.
But yeah, it's got the Form Builder module that you can actually like place your form fields on the screen. And it's kind of like using like a SurveyMonkey or one of those kinds of sites that lets you, you know, put up a survey or just collect data. I guess Google Docs kind of has this functionality. I've seen a lot of people use Google Docs to just collect information, but this has all of the flexibility that you know and love from WebForm. And if all you need is just to collect some data and you don't really need to set up a new site, or your client says, "Oh, we're going to set up a SurveyMonkey," be like, "Wait, stop. Let me show you this. It's free." Because I know some of the other sites, they like limit you on the number of submissions or number of fields or who knows what it is, but WebForm, check it out.
Yeah, it's out.
WebForm.com.
WebForm.com. And yeah, by the way, it was the Form Builder module that you were talking
when
about.
I saw that, I just thought it was so cool.
Yeah, it's fun. I can't wait to see like how it develops and how much traction it gains. So my pick of the week is just a small module called Flood Control. And I don't know if anyone's, this happens to me all the time on a local host, when, you know, if I set up a quick site and I, you know, put in some goofy password, admin password, and I forget what it is or something, and I enter the password a few times and I keep getting rejected, eventually this Drupal 7 thing kicks in called Flood Control, where it actually stops you from, you know, trying to be able to log in anymore. Like, it won't even look at your credentials until a certain amount of time has passed. And there's these internal settings to Drupal 7 that control how long of a time frame it is and how many times you can try and log in before flood control kicks in.
But well, it's weird because like you don't actually know that any of these settings are in there, right?
Yeah, you don't realize it until you maybe do a little bit of research. So what this flood control module does is it exposes all of these hidden variables and lets you tweak them a little bit. So, you know, the number of possible tries to log in before flood control gets kicked in, the amount of time that has to pass before you're allowed to try to log in again. It's one of those things that normally I used to use the Devel module and that little variable table editor to tweak these variables, but this just gives you a nice little UI to tweak these variables really quick. So anyone who's been stymied by flood control, this module helps a lot.
Cool.
All right, so we have one more interview, right?
Yeah, and actually, speaking of Andrew's pick of the week, I'm going to take a look and make sure that I'm right about this, but the maintainer for a grand number of the commerce modules is actually Ryan Sarama himself. Oh, in this case, it's not. It's someone called Recrit.
Yeah, it was someone different.
I actually know who that means. Does it have his real name? No. Okay, if you don't put your real name on your Drupal profile page, then we can't give you proper attribution. So Recrit, whoever you are, thank you for making awesome modules. Yeah, our last interview is actually with Ryan Sarama of the Drupal Commerce Project. So we've had him on before. He always just has something really great to say about what's going on in the world of Drupal Commerce. And in this case, he actually mentions that there are people that are using Drupal Commerce as the core, as sort of like the point of sale almost, to a bunch of Drupal 6 sites that are like a distributed network of Drupal 6 sites in a particular country, and then they use like a services module to then send their orders to a Drupal Commerce site running on Drupal 7 in the central server, which just sounds crazy to me.
It's crazy.
So yeah, check it out. Ryan Zaramo.
Welcome to Ryan on Ryan, or the Drupal Easy Podcast, whichever you want to call it. So I'm standing here with Ryan Zaramo of the Drupal Commerce module and the Commerce Guys company. What's your title for Commerce Guys?
At Commerce Guys, I sort of style myself as the VP of Community Development. So basically, it's the double entendre. I am developing the community around Drupal Commerce, but I'm also doing a lot of free software development for the community.
Cool. So you get to do a lot of contributions as part of your job?
Absolutely.
And a lot of times those contributions are driven by a project that is a client project, right?
Yeah, I mean like the core Drupal Commerce stuff, like I'm pushing forward regardless. So like my time is just about full-time just on Drupal Commerce, and then occasionally we'll get like a need for a new payment integration or shipping integration, so I'll hammer out some code real fast and then hopefully get the rest of the team to take it on to completion.
Cool. And you know, we're at the mobile DrupalCon, right? Like, I don't remember the tagline, but it's like every device,
every device.
So, what is Drupal Commerce doing in the mobile space? Like, obviously, we have like responsive designs, but like, yeah. Is there anything special you do with a commerce site when you're doing that kind of project?
There's nothing really special because Drupal Commerce is built around the fundamental core concept of fieldable entities. So every data type in a Drupal Commerce store is going to be a different type of entity, from products to customer information to orders, line items, and payment transactions. Those are the main five. And because they're all very well defined, they're all defined through the same API, it's really simple to turn that stuff into, for example, a REST server resource. So I'm talking about integrating with the services module. So it already provides a lot by way of authentication, you know, checking permissions and all this stuff, which we're already tying into because we build on the same core entity system. So you sort of work through the services module, define these different, you know, service endpoints to expose your commerce data, and you're good to go. So there's nothing you need to do when building the site itself to prepare yourself to go mobile, but you will have to do a little bit of legwork, you know, once you've built the site to go mobile.
Right, but the building blocks are there, and like the fact that services really, it supports entities of all kinds is kind of like the magic sauce there.
Yeah. I mean, like the only thing we brought to bear for a client was they wanted to communicate. This was like, you know, it's not exactly website to mobile device, but website to website. Same system. We built them a services API. They had a bunch of different REST resources that allowed them to communicate from Drupal 6 satellite sites to a master commerce server. But they didn't, you know, when you're dealing with these remote API requests, you don't want to have to send off a separate HTTP request for each entity you want to create. Because whenever you're building a new order, for example, there might be like three or four entities that you have to build all at once. So we build these combined resources that allow them to submit all the data at once in a sort of array format, and then would build you know, the full order object and just return the actual order ID to you. So
I bet there's somebody out there who knows all about XML, RPC, and SOAP, and they're going,
yay!
Right?
Yeah.
So that sounds really cool. Like the distributed sites that get to talk to the central server, because I can imagine that trying to keep that stuff in sync, if you were doing it truly asynchronously, would be kind of a pain. But and the world is getting more global now too, like especially like I could be using my mobile device from another country, but I want to be treated like I belong in this location, right?
So
I think one thing that, you know, we had Luke Krabluski
speaking this morning.
Yes. Yeah. This is like concentrate on that word.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things he brought up was, like, making your apps location aware.
Yeah.
So, what are people doing that with Commerce?
Yeah. I know, you know, a clear example that you can actually look at in the browser. I can't vouch for their mobile integration. But there's a website called Coles2U in the UK that would take your zip code and quote you different prices for the product based on your proximity to their different resource centers. So it was delivering coal, and the company that delivered this stuff knew that if you were at this zip code, that they had a, you know, they had a depot, you know, 30 miles away, and so they would adjust the price of the product based on your location. So again, if you're using Drupal Commerce and mobile, you can get that without them having to ever submit the form in the first place. So not only can you, you know, make your pricing perhaps reflect proximity to a location, you can also easily do store pickup. You can easily do context-aware language switching and currency switching. Drupal Commerce already supports currency conversion, fully supports multilingual products, and of course product display nodes. So you can have a sort of automatic location-aware site just by really, really Commerce doesn't have to do anything.
And I know
really,
this is a really common thing with, particularly like if you're more like a wholesale kind of a company.
Yes.
And yeah. you still have like a public-facing product site. I've had to do this before. You put in your zip code and it was like U.S. and Canada, and then they had to find like the closest distributor.
I've done that for Lowe's recently. I just recently moved to South Carolina, and of course I was at Lowe's like every other day, and whenever you use their website, you can just pick your store based on, you know, I guess your billing address or wherever they say this is your store, go pick it up. So,
cool.
Similar idea that you could do just using Drupal, you know, using some rules or views to filter, you know, by, I guess you could use like a local solar installer or something to do your proximity to different stores. We actually did a store finder like that for a client before, but it was, you know, not in the context of mobile.
Right.
Similar idea.
Really cool. Well, and everything that works on mobile, it should be able to work on the traditional web too.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think all this stuff is pretty applicable, like services stuff, like you say. Like, that might be server to server communication, it might be mobile to server, it might be, you know, a browser with, a lot of people are talking now about these, like, JavaScript front ends to stuff. Like,
yeah.
There's a session going on right now about, like, Backbone.js, which is one of these libraries that does that. So, and those things, they have to talk JSON or talk XML or something,
yeah,
because, you know, somehow this data has to get back to the server,
yeah,
right? And for, yeah, Drupal, that means services.
Yeah.
So you obviously, you get to do your, like, big Drupal Commerce, like, you know, pep rally at DrupalCon.
Yeah.
So what were some of the highlights from that?
Well, one of the main things that we did differently this time around is we actually got to announce, for the first time really, like an actual roadmap. So, you know, Commerce guys recently received a round of funding, $5 million to really build and promote Drupal Commerce as, you know, the world's best open source e-commerce platform. And for us, that means simplifying it. Because, of course, we're built on all these core concepts of views and rules and entities and fields and everything else besides that make it super flexible and make it mind-blowing for new users. And we really want to increase our adoption outside of the Drupal community.
Yeah.
And that's never going to happen if you have to send somebody through the rules user interface to set up a discount.
Right.
And so one of our key focuses with the funding is to build a team that's really focused on polishing our Commerce Kickstart distribution. Right now, it's really just a glorified installation profile. It is packaged as a distribution on Drupal.org. And our version 2 plans were communicated. And we're actually going to have a BOF here after lunch that really goes through how we intend to make this attractive out of the box, an actual polished storefront out of the box. So that's really exciting for us. We hope to launch at DrupalCon Munich, so you can, you know, watch for the news between now and then. We already have Bojan Zivanovic, Bojan Z. He does a ton of work all over Drupal, including views bulk operations and a bunch of other key modules. And, you know, he's been polishing address book. We're polishing our inline product form, so you don't have to maintain your product data separate from your product node data. You can actually just have a product form built right into the node form, you know, fully supports multi-value references and all of our attribute stuff and bulk creation, all that stuff. So he's working on that. We also have Nicolas as one of our Paris developers working on that with him. And we're going to bring more people to focus specifically on this because, you know, without dedicated time and resources, is it's just not going to materialize on its own. So that's been a huge win for us. We're also going to revamp DrupalCommerce.org, so look for that to actually be attractive soon and to be useful. The whole, like...
I remember when you guys first set that up, and it was like the Uber Core project or something.
Didn't
like
you set
that
up the messaging notifications?
I was like, I want email notifications.
Yeah. So we're going to bring it into Drupal 7. We're going to ditch the general forums and actually just implement a subset of Stack Exchange for a little Q&A system. It'll work out great.
Like actual Stack Exchange or Drupal version of Stack Exchange?
It'll be like a minimal like Drupal version. So nodes, answer nodes, vote up downs, and views and stuff. So
many people do so many different things with e-commerce. Like that's one of the only ways to do it is basically make it user-generated content. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's exactly it. Yes, Commerce Guys offers professional support, but no way do we ever want to have somebody just sitting there answering everybody's questions all the time, across the board. And so we really want the new DrupalCommerce.org to be extremely focused on self-help and user self-support. So building a community of people that are and there are some guys that are doing that in the forums right now, but frankly it's discouraging them to not have better tools. So that's really been driving the redesign and the relaunch. We're already doing the theming to the design. It's a really sharp design, a bold departure. Like it's actually out of my comfort zone, but I like it. So I'm looking forward to unleashing that on everybody. We're basically getting away from the safe corporate gray, that all the e-commerce projects out there use. So it'll be a little colorful, a little friendly, but hopefully a very useful resource.
Well, we'll look for that soon.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Another thing that I was able to announce, and for anybody listening, if this is you, feel free to get in touch. But I'm actually going to be building a Drupal Commerce team. So, within Commerce Guys, I've been fairly autonomous building and maintaining Drupal Commerce. I do get a lot of great help from the team, especially when they're on projects that feed back into the core, or when they do consulting that improves core performance. Of course, there's always contributions coming back, and Damien there for architecture, and Boyan for this, that, and the other. So, great help. But I'm looking to actually bring somebody in full time that's going to help maintain this stuff alongside of me, so that we can really scale out our efforts to not just take care of core, but also take care of all these essential contributed modules that have to be maintained. So all the shipping integrations and payment integrations and all this stuff that, if you look at my modules list right now, they're all in dev because I haven't been able to push them to completion. So I'm really going to bring somebody on board to do that.
So kind of like a coder.
Exactly. Yeah. A coder, somebody that's this, experienced Drupal contributor. I'm remote, so that position's remote as well. We're looking to do that immediately. And again, this is thanks to the raise. And what's great is that our investors really get open source, and they really want us to be better at engaging our community. We were actually sitting in a technical due diligence meeting, and I got called out because there was an issue in the issue tracker that was set as critical, and it was like a year old. Now, why haven't you solved this issue yet? And realistically, it was put to critical errantly. Like, I didn't do that. I would not have classified it as such, but they know that this is how community works, and if you don't have intentional people set aside to really manage this and maintain it and help it grow, that it's just not going to happen. These are the guys behind MySQL, so they know how to grow an open source community. So it was really good. So they get this, they fully support building this team and having these guys not generating revenue for the company, but they're really really building our core product, the core project of Drupal Commerce. So, and then at the same time, I'm also looking to have somebody that can help us do really make Drupal Commerce shine as a self-help and documentation portal, doing multimedia technical communication, really, working alongside of myself and the Commerce Kickstart team to push that stuff forward. So
that's more like a community manager type of person almost?
More technical, probably not a developer because we'd want to pay them more doing other stuff for the company, but somebody that understands the technology but is really good at communicating to non-technical people the concepts that we're dealing with, because Drupal 7 is really complex and Drupal Commerce builds right on top of that complexity.
Right.
But we need to be able to break it down and explain to people what do we mean by e-commerce framework, and what do we mean by you can do that without an extra module, because people, and this came up in my session, the questions and stuff afterwards, and again in the contributed module discussion, they want a module that does feature X. Like I want a donations module, and we said, well, you don't need a module, you can just build this stuff. But that's still too complex for many of our users. So
toolkit is very different than power tool, right?
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. So a lot of great stuff there. As far as the software itself goes, we're stable, rocking and rolling it. 1.2, I hope to have a 1.3 out soon to solve some issues with payment notification, because right now, for you know, the asynchronous payment notifications you'll get from PayPal, right now there are a couple instances where like the checkout completion rules may not fire, so we need to solve that, because we really want our, you know, the off-site and on-site payment experience to function the same with respect to the checkout completion logic, so that you don't have to worry about, you know, where they pay. Your orders are going to be updated and maintained the same way. But, you know, core's going along great. A lot of great contributor modules coming out. And again, I got to give a shout out to some of our top contributors, like Google Torp, who's doing a great job with shipping stuff. Hesse Juve, who's doing a great job in Martplug and all sorts of contributors. Who else? Of course, our team. But that's not fair. I can't give myself a pat on the back. But, you know, our guys are rocking and rolling with a lot of contributors right now. You know, a special thanks even to the guys in Asia. I've got to meet, finally, Sky Red Wong, for example. He's, you know, really taking Drupal commerce to China and really wanting to make it shine there. And of course, guys from Japan doing the same thing. Sean Ward and others who are really looking to push Drupal commerce into new territory. So really appreciate that. Really appreciate all the patches we get, for sure. Mr. Bailey's, you're my hero.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So in this whole, like, you know, Drupal has made it really easy to build really powerful websites, and I think Drupal Commerce is pretty much in that same bucket, right? It's like, yeah, it is like the Swiss Army knife, yeah, of e-commerce,
yeah,
websites.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, even talking to people that have come from backgrounds working with proprietary software like Hybris or other open source projects like Magento, they're blown away by the flexibility. And that said, we don't have the polish, and that's why, you know, a large part of our roadmap involves bringing some of that polish to bear. But we're often winning on the technical argument,
right.
And so if we can also win on the front end,
right,
you know, we can win on the back end, if we could also win on the front end and then win on the marketing end, it'll be a really huge win for Drupal, bringing Drupal commerce to, you know, a lot of really high profile larger e-commerce size brands that people would know,
right.
And right now, you know, I can't name, you know, US brands that people might actually recognize around the world, but the possibility is totally there with Drupal commerce moving forward. You know, one example it's a recent Drupal commerce user is the Royal Mail Group in the UK, you know, using Drupal commerce right now to process transactions and in a high, you know, high performance scenario. So, you know, brands like that are really going to legitimize Drupal commerce over and against these other projects that have, you know, teams of dedicated engineers and they're proprietary and locked down and charging buku dollars in licensing fees. I mean, even Magento, you got to pay a licensing fee if you want enterprise Magento. So,
right,
like, Drupal commerce will really outstrip them.
There's no open core to commerce. It's all open.
Yeah.
It's great. It's really great. So, you know, you get to a certain point in our community where probably our goals were in the past very technical, but now we're having to shift to this world where our goals are more on, like, the user experience side, like you say. So do you have, like, a role model or, like, a favorite company or product that you, like, look at and you say, like, I wish we could be like X?
Okay. So obviously there's, like, the regulars in the Drupal world. You look at, you know, anything that DevSeed was doing and that now Phase 2 is carrying on, like, that they are bringing that polish and that sort of cohesive user experience to Drupal distributions. But in the e-commerce space, I've actually been blown away by TicketCake.com.
Yeah.
So this is a sort of event marketplace. It was originally built on Ubercart, wasn't sufficient for them, so they switched to Drupal Commerce, and they're rocking and rolling with an incredible customized interface for merchants to go in and, you know, post their own content, which is crazy, right? Because I would never hand, you know, casual Joe, you know, merchant, a Drupal Commerce backend to go and start listing products and make product displays and so on and so forth. But they have such a customized interface for doing this stuff. It's brilliant, and the front end looks sharp. You know, it looks like a store you'd want to buy from, that you'd, you know, you get that confidence. And then just on the back, and they've really, really tailor-made the interface. And so, of course, I mean, you won't see that if you just go look at their website right now, but hopefully we can get Dylan from TicketCake to talk about how he's put together this back-end experience and then bring a lot of those things to bear in Commerce Kickstarter, even just in Drupal Commerce in general. So he's definitely a role model, one that we just met here and got to see his stuff, but those guys are great. And then also, I got to really give props to Linovate. They're out of Israel. And they do amazing Drupal websites in general. Long-time users of UberCart, putting together beautiful UberCart websites. Now, of course, switched over to Drupal Commerce. And again, just I just saw a site. It's still in a private beta, so you can't get in. It's a, you know, like a unisex underwear line or something. Okay. So it's called under.me. And so you, again, you won't be able to go see the product catalog right now, but if you're able to look at the beta, like it's this fully Ajax-driven single-page catalog system that really cool, really sharp, and then just like a great user experience for the customer. I can't vouch for their back-end stuff. Guys that are really pushing the boundaries on back-end, like marketing tools built into the back-end of Drupal would be like LiveLink in the UK. They have some resources you go look at to find out how they're not just making it nice and easy to use, they're making it mean something to CMOs and to the guys that are actually marketing and wanting to know how to price products and market products. And so that sort of thing that they're able to build into the back end of Drupal Commerce is really great for their clients. So that they're LiveLink in the UK, and I think I know that their CTO has recently talked about this stuff at a conference in the Netherlands. Can't remember the name, but go look.
All right, that is our cue to wrap it up.
Go to their site and you'll find some good info. So.
All right, Science Rama. Find you at Commerce Guys, but you also have your personal website. You do anything there?
BuyWombats.com, yeah, I still blog there. Drupal Commerce updates, personal things. And,
excellent. Great. So. Well, and you are Ars Rama all around the interwebs.
Yep, except on Twitter, where Ars Rama was taken, so Ryan's Rama on Twitter.
Excellent.
You can probably find me.
Always great to talk to you.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
All right, so I hope you guys have enjoyed all of our DrupalCon Denver coverage. We've officially reached the end of all of our interviews, finally, and we'll be getting back to our sort of like regular semi-weekly podcasts pretty soon. And so, do you have anything else to say, Mike?
Yeah, I know. I've got to go in a minute here, but I definitely, as always, want to give a shout-out to Web Enabled, our podcast sponsor. Definitely check them out if you're looking for shared development hosting or just a quick way of spinning up a Drupal site to evaluate it. Webenabled.com is, you know, super quick, super easy, and offers a free trial for 30 days. So check them out at webenabled.com.
Excellent. And I have a quick plug. It's actually for the place where I'm sitting right now. It's Urban Rethink. And we actually have a really neat event coming up on May the 6th, which is a Sunday. So if you're anywhere in Florida or, you know, you don't mind taking a trip to Orlando to see a really awesome guest speaker, we have Hillary Mason from Bitly. She's the chief scientist at Bitly. She works with Python a lot, but also some data visualization software like R and other sorts of, you know, analytical, statistical things like that. And she's going to talk a little bit about big data and how we can sort of like change the world with data and analytics. It should be really interesting. So check out urbanrethink.com and you can get some of the details on that. And hopefully we will be able to videotape it and republish it for you. But just looking up Hillary Mason in general is a good idea, because that would be like if we could pick a person as our pick of the week, that would be my pick of the week.
And we're a sponsor. We're one of the sponsors of the event.
Yeah, Drupal Easy is sponsoring the event. So please check that out. And come visit us at Urban Rethink. This has been the Drupal Easy Podcast, episode 81. And I think there's just one thing left to say, Mike. And a couple of other things to say is, like, please subscribe and please leave us comments and ratings on your favorite podcast client. And if you want to find us on Facebook or Google Plus or Twitter, we're in all of those places. We would love to see you and talk to you.
See you next time on the Drupal Easy Podcast. See ya!